You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Thursday night football, Chargers and the Raiders. Good, not great, but it is Thursday night. Why couldn't the snow have happened on Saturday? Because Saturday could be one of the greatest couch days of all time. When you think about all the football, we got NFL football coming up on Saturday as well. You know, we're going to decide the ACC. We're going to decide the SEC. You got the Big 12 in there. There's a lot of fun stuff. You got the Big 12. You got the Big 10. So there's a lot of great football. You got Friday night will be the Pac-12 title game between USC and Oregon. But Saturday is going to be a great, great viewing day. Yes, Paulie?
Yeah, Saturday you got to get up early and be ready because noon Eastern, Northwestern Ohio State, A&M Tennessee also noon Eastern, Oklahoma, Iowa State also noon Eastern. Then you got the biggie, the hammer, 3:30 p.m. Eastern, Louisiana, Raging Cajuns, Coastal Carolina.
Yeah.
Clemson, Notre Dame at 4 p.m. Eastern. That feels like an 8 p.m. game. That feels prime time. And then you got Alabama, Florida, 8 p.m. Eastern.
We say good morning to our TV partner, Peacock. You can watch all 3 hours for free. Download the app, and you can also stream The Office. They have all 201 episodes of The Office and Yellowstone, one of my favorite shows, all three seasons with Kevin Costner. Say good morning to our radio affiliates around the country as well. Poll question, play of the day, stat of the day, all of that forthcoming. We had Trevor Lawrence on the program yesterday in the final hour. And I thought he handled himself quite well. I thought he was good. He was self-deprecating, had some fun. You know, the things that I wanted answers to, he was kind of good at scrambling outside the pocket, avoiding the rush there. But up until this point of his college career, Trevor Lawrence pretty much knows nothing other than winning. He's had one loss at Clemson, national title game versus LSU. But Saturday, he leads the Tigers against Notre Dame in the ACC Championship, a chance to advance to another Final Four. But in all likelihood, that will change in a couple of months when Lawrence goes into the NFL draft, probably the number one pick, and it looks like the winless Jets will be there waiting to catch him. The speculation's already begun. Now, I don't know who started the speculation. I don't know if this is one of those where there's smoke, there's fire. Maybe he doesn't want to go play for New York. I asked him the question yesterday. Now, granted, it wasn't a great headline-making answer, but you can kind of read between the lines. Here's Trevor Lawrence yesterday. Have you watched the Jets, Trevor?
I haven't really, honestly. Obviously,
don't.
Honestly, I know some of this stuff I say sounds cliche, but just to have the opportunity to go somewhere, help someone rebuild if that's what it is or whatever and just win. That's what, you know, something I love doing. I think that's what I'm best at is winning. Just to have that chance, obviously some places it'll be more of a challenge than others, but I think I'm up for it. And that'll get here when it's here. Just trying to focus now on being great where I'm at.
Okay. I mean, it sounds like he's playing nice. That doesn't mean that as we get closer that the word gets out that he doesn't want to go to the Jets. I find it amazing, difficult, hard to believe, on a Sunday when the Jets are playing, that you wouldn't do just a little, just a sneak peek. That's all. Just look at the uniforms, maybe look at the wide receivers, maybe the offensive line, things that could be important for you next week. But he says he's not a big NFL fan, didn't grow up a big NFL fan, and doesn't watch the Jets. And he's not alone. But we should enjoy what he's done so far at Clemson. By all accounts, he's handled himself quite admirably here. And he's turned in one of the more successful careers that a quarterback has had in college football history. I was also wondering about this yesterday. Like, people are up in arms. I'm hearing everybody now. They're up in arms over the Final Four in the rankings. Like, where have you been? Like, Kirk Herbstreit. Great respect for Herbie. Herbie, where have you been? It's not like this is the first year where somebody got jobbed or it's not fair. I got everybody now jumping into the deep end. Okay, I get it. Come on in. But what are we solving here? Herbie should say to ESPN, his employer, hey, guys, how do we make this better? How do we be more inclusive here? You know, college football doesn't preach parity when you think about it. All the other sports want the bad teams to get better. They want you to get a chance. You finish last in the NFL, they give you a friendlier schedule the following year. You win your division, your schedule usually gets tougher. But when you think about it, There's no system for parity in college football. The NFL is all about giving bad teams a chance to get better. College football is the opposite. Kentucky, Vandy, like some of these schools, they can't compete in the SEC, not with football, right? So what do you do? Do you say Kentucky can sign 27 players, Alabama gets 20? It's not going to happen. But that's the system, and you're trying to change the system. And I honestly thought this last night. You know, as much as I've railed on this with just tell these schools they don't have a chance, at least be honest with them, maybe we go back to the BCS. Just one versus two. Because you know what would happen then? Let's say it's Alabama-Notre Dame. How much would we be hearing from Ohio State fans and Clemson fans? And that's when you might get change. Now, I said, let's do a Final Four. You know, I was shouting that let's do a Final Four. And, you know, get more teams, more fan bases. But really, it's just the same schools. And you don't give somebody outside the, you know, top five, six, seven, eight, a real chance to compete. And that's all you want. Just give me a chance to compete. Ask any athlete on any level. I just want to compete. But this shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. That all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, do you see what's happening here? I mean, it's if you said Ohio State, Clemson, Notre Dame, and Alabama are playing for the championship in the Final Four, I'd be like, great, I'm fine with it. Because I am. As a TV viewer, I am. But my job is not just to be a TV viewer. It's to look at this, to talk to people, and try to give you something to think about. And maybe the committee thinks about it. I don't know if they will, because it comes down to business. And this is big business. Do I want to see Cincinnati play Alabama and get blown out by 40? I don't. But Cincinnati would love the opportunity to play Alabama and get blown out by 40. We don't even give you the chance. And that's always been my problem with this. The conference, the AAC, the commissioner, Mike Oresko, he was on with Paul Feinbaum, and he talked about the college football playoff system. This is the conference that has Cincinnati, Tulsa, Memphis, Central Florida, SMU, Houston, to name a few. Navy, here is the commissioner.
If this continues, I'd say let's bring back the BCS and the computers, because it would be a fairer system than what I'm seeing now. I mean, this is the seventh year, and it does appear that the deck is stacked against us and against other G4. I think the committee is, you know, honestly undermining its credibility with the rankings that to me defy logic and common sense and fairness.
He's right. But when we went to four teams, it felt like there was more of a conversation about when you go to four, do you go to six, do you go to eight, do you go to 10, do you go to 12? I understand that. And I had people who said, well, you're going to water down the regular season. No, I don't think so. I got more teams involved in the playoffs. So now what I've done is I have four schools. Let's say I have two more. We'll put A&M in there and maybe Florida or Iowa State. That's it. Those are the only ones who can play in the Final Four. I think we would all be in agreement, right? Let's say I had an 8-team playoff. And then you look at the standings. So, Paulie, look at, you know, 5 through 8.
As of right now?
Yeah, so you got A&M, Iowa State.
Iowa State, Florida, Georgia. Yeah, first round games would be Alabama, Georgia, Notre Dame, Florida, Iowa State, Clemson, Ohio State, A&M.
Okay, so those are the eight that would be in. Now, take the next 6 to 8 schools, and now they're at least involved in the conversation of making it into the Final Eight. That's why I said the regular season doesn't get watered down. College basketball, the regular season, no one cares about. I mean, I watch, I enjoy it, but it doesn't mean anything. College football, every game would matter because you would have a chance to play in the playoffs. Instead, it's 4 schools, 5 schools, 6 schools. That's about it. Now I can extrapolate that, and I get out to 16 schools maybe that have a chance. And that's all I'm asking for. Just give them a chance. You know, if you want to incorporate the bowl games, great. Incorporate the bowl games. You know, I don't, as I've been told by somebody who worked at the Fiesta Bowl, you're going to ruin, you know, the integrity and the sanctity and the pomp and pageantry of the bowl. I said, stop it. Stop. Who won the Fiesta Bowl last year? Who won the Cotton Bowl last year? Who won the Orange Bowl last year? Like, do we really care? All it is there's something to watch. And ESPN leads the charge. You know, get these commissioners together with ESPN, and maybe you could come up with a solution here. Or maybe they don't want one. As was pointed out to me last night by, you know, one of my college football sources, do you realize that the Power Five conferences and ESPN don't want to change this? Why would they? They want quality teams playing big games, and there's big money attached to it. They don't want to have a stinker. They don't want to have one of those games where you go, oh, my God. Now we got to fill airtime here for 30 minutes because this is a blowout. They don't want that. And maybe that's the case. No, maybe, but I want to be on record as saying, if 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, when I'm done with this, that I can at least look back and say, all right, I stood up, you know, against the BCS. I wanted to have a playoff, you know, expand it. I want to have a chance for everybody who warrants a chance. Like, I don't know if USC's any good, but the eye test for Ohio State feels like it's a whole lot better than USC for some reason. And they're both 5-0. I don't know what the eye test is, but we only had one patient in the visiting the eye doctor, and that was Ohio State. There's no other school that we said, you know what? Did they pass the eye test here? No other school. Just Ohio State. It's because the committee wants Ohio State in there. The Big Ten has changed their rules. You got to have 6 wins. Five. No, you can have 5. You can have 5. Hell, they probably could have gotten in 4. That's why they're changing the rules. You know, they talk about integrity and student athlete, and they give you all these catchphrases, cliches. It's just money. That's all it is. Just money. Yeah, Paul.
And every year the deck gets stacked more against these smaller conferences. You know, the term Power Five is not a real term. It's a media created term that's not an official designation in any way. You can look it up. There is no Power Five conferences. When they were talking about the Vanderbilt kicker, she was the first kicker to ever kick for a Power Five conference team. That's not a real term. It's not an official designation. But it keeps the branding of these conferences to be the heavyweights and the others. It's almost like mid-major. Remember the description mid-major 20
yeah.
years ago?
Yeah.
It was a slight.
Yeah.
And you were cute and fuzzy. And that's what, you know, they keep Louisiana and Coastal Carolina being cute and fuzzy. They never will let them in if and the other thing about the computers don't have an opinion. They have a formula. They have an aggregate. This college football committee, they can make moves that make sure Cincinnati drops a spot even though they didn't play. Or Coastal Carolina is 12, not 8, because then they're in striking distance.
Well, they dropped Cincinnati, and the logic was, well, they haven't played since November 21st. Ohio State's played one game since November 21st. But Cincinnati dropped. Ohio State didn't move anywhere. They haven't played. Now, it's not all, you know, it's not their fault. You had games that, you know, were canceled. You know, 3 games. I get that. And Ohio State is, by all accounts, a very talented team. But I don't like this system because the system is rigged. And then National Signing Day is the rich get richer. I mean, this is what Urban Meyer pointed out last week. He said, this is going to continue. Like, this is nothing changes here. You know who the number one team was? Had the best signing day? Alabama. I'm sure Clemson's up there too. Ohio State's up there too. Not going to change anytime soon. But it doesn't mean we can't at least critique, criticize, offer up suggestions, be angry about it. But I will enjoy the Final Four, and if it's these 4 teams, I'll enjoy it. You know, I sound hypocritical, but I will. I will watch it, and I'll enjoy it. But I just think if you're going to have a game, then what are the rules of the game that we're in? Because it feels like there are different sets of rules for conferences. and schools and at least let everybody in on it. You know, I would love full disclosure where they just say, Cincinnati, you got no shot. Like, even laugh at them. I just say, you got no shot.
Rub their hair like a little kid in the neighborhood.
Yeah, hey, now we got some nice parting gift. Coastal Carolina, get a clue. You got no chance. Yeah, see.
That's I would rather them just get the chance to play and get absolutely destroyed. And if we do that for the next 4 years, 5 years, then eventually be like, okay, it's different. Never mind.
But you might get that surprise.
You might get that one.
Yeah, you might get that. All of these matchups are 16 versus 1 in the NCAA. When you think about it, it's 16 versus 1. And we've seen what's happened as of late. 16's not that far away from 1. Now, basketball's different. It truly is, and it takes one really good player or players who play together for 4 years, and how valuable that is and how good those teams are. It's different. You know, college football is about, 100 kids. College basketball is about 5 or 6 or 7 on your roster. Big difference there. I get it. But I love the possibility. And as I said earlier in the week, whenever we have a movie, a book, it's never based off the team that blows everybody out, wins by 70. It's about Hoosiers, right? The little guy. Rudy, the little guy. Like, that's what this is all about. College basketball, college football, especially college basketball. Dare to dream. That's all. Yeah, Paul.
Dan, you brought up Hoosiers. It's the perfect analogy because back then, Indiana did not have class system for basketball. Every single high school in the state made the postseason. And so Milan, little school, had a chance, and they beat the Indianapolis school. Now Indiana has a class system basketball, AA, AAA, 6-5-4. That won't happen again in Indiana history because of the new system.
And look, I know I root for the underdog, but when you say, well, these teams can't compete, all I know is a couple of years ago, Army went to Oklahoma when Kyler Murray was the quarterback and took Oklahoma at Oklahoma into overtime. It can happen. But we'll never know. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com. Or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Tim McMahon has done a wonderful job. Whenever I see that he has posted something on the mothership, I usually stop to read that. And I saw the latest article. And granted, Tim doesn't come up with the headline, but the headline caught my attention. James Harden and the Rockets are at a breaking point. And Tim McMahon joins us now. What do you mean by that, Tim? They're at a breaking point.
Well, look, obviously, James Harden wants out. The Rockets at some point will accommodate that at a point when they deem appropriate, when they feel like there's fair value on the table. But really what the Rockets are right now is at a cultural reckoning. For 8 years, the Rockets' business philosophy when it came to basketball was kiss James Harden's ass and let's keep him as happy as possible. And that has spanned two owners. Really, Daryl Morey was the ringleader. He worked his butt off to get a star, to get a superstar. He was right on James Harden when a lot of people thought he was taking a huge risk on this guy who was a sixth man in OKC. And they did whatever they possibly could to keep him happy. This is not necessarily an unusual philosophy. It's not unusual for a superstar to be able to determine what the travel schedule is, to be able to determine what the practice schedule is. Now, Harden would determine that based on what the club scene was in a certain city, whether they were going to stay over or not, or, you know, practice schedule, hey, day off, let me get to Vegas, that sort of thing. But and then the power in the personnel moves, you know, determining who's coaching, determining who his co-stars is. And then, honestly, I think all of this stuff, there's still not necessarily a consensus. People who were with Rockets, people who are still with the Rockets, whether it was the right approach, because look, they got 8 years of superstar performance. You know, they got a perennial MVP candidate type of performance. They didn't get to the top of the mountain, but they were in that handful of teams that had a chance to contend, but it's crashing down on them now. And really, it's the Chris Paul and a package of picks for 1 year of rust and everybody wants out. That is the power flex by James Harden that is just crippling the Rockets franchise at this point.
But I don't understand it. He built it, and now he wants to escape it. It's like, hey, I built this house, but I don't like it. I got to get out. It's on fire here. He's the one that built this thing. And then I don't know where this came from, and maybe you can help me, that he had a problem with ownership and their politics, that was a reason that he wanted out.
I know that's been out there. I'll just say nothing in my reporting has suggested that's been an issue. So I can't really speak on the political thing because, again, I don't have that reporting. I don't know if there's any truth to that. I'll tell you this, though. If I build a house and that thing starts burning, I'm getting the hell out.
But he lit the fire, though, Tim.
Oh, well, hey.
He's the arsonist.
And I do not disagree with you. I think you are absolutely right. I think if we want to look at this thing, I think there's a lot of blame that you can pass around. I do think James Harden's taking a big slice of that and, you know, insert your punchline on his waistline at this point. But this is the reality of the situation. And you know what? At some point, he will get his wish to be traded. He will not get to dictate the terms of that trade. He could dictate the terms of Chris Paul and a bundle of picks for Russell Westbrook because he could say, hey, you either get Russ or I'm going to be a problem and I'm going to want to get the hell out of here. He wants to get the hell out now. He can't dictate the terms where it goes at this point. I do think there will be an offer that the Rockets deem fair at some point before the trade deadline, but it's not on the table right now.
And you don't have to trade him to a contender because his list, oh, by the way, is filled with really good teams. Like, you know, why not say we're going to not that, and we've talked about this before, the Knicks don't have the assets here, but Sacramento or somebody like that, why am I giving in? I'm enabling one more time by saying, well, okay, James, we're going to send you to where, you know, you want to go.
Why would Sacramento trade for James Harden knowing he wants nothing to do with being there, knowing he's going to be unhappy, knowing that in 2 years he's getting the hell out of Dodge. So that's the thing.
Yeah.
It's not that he necessarily gets to pick his team and he's gone from Brooklyn to, well, Philly and maybe these other teams, you know. But it's not that he gets to pick the team, but it has to make sense for that team as well, because especially if the asking price remains what it is, young franchise cornerstone and a bundle of picks and or promising talent on rookie contracts, you're giving up a ton to get them. So you're not going to give up a ton to get a guy who's just unhappy, you know, and doesn't want to be there. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be a miserable experience. Then he's going to be gone.
But okay, handicap this though for me, Tim. If we look at this, does Milwaukee have the assets given what they...
Milwaukee's not a factor in this.
I mean, they gave up their draft picks. They gave up a lot to get Jrue Holiday.
Well, that and Giannis and Harden have taken several shots at each other and can't stand each other. But other than that, I think it would be great.
All right. Philly, if Philly says, we'll give you Ben Simmons and whoever, Tobias Harris, or something.
Well, it would be what the Rockets will want there is Ben Simmons and picks.
Okay.
Tybal could be a pick. And look, P.J. Tucker's probably getting traded at some point, too. It would make a lot of sense if he's traded along with Harden to Philly. Daryl Morey obviously knows both players well. P.J. Tucker is a great role player on an expiring contract. So you can expand the deal that way. But, yeah, it's Ben Simmons, and then you haggle over picks. You haggle whether Tybal's in the deal. I still think that is the most likely scenario. I'm not certain that there is a consensus within the Sixers organization that they want to have anything to do with those kind of discussions.
And then I look at the Miami Heat, and I have somebody who works there, and I just said, you know, give me the validity of, you know, that possibility. And you know, so I guess they're exploring this, and if Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero would be the two assets that you might be able to get. Okay, if I'm Houston, you got my attention. Because I do have young players. I have an all-star, maybe a potential all-star there. And maybe I get rid of all this drama, and there's a little addition by subtraction there. But if I'm Miami, like Jimmy Butler had a hard time playing in Philly and Minnesota because of, you know, these players who are immature. I mean, James Harden, can be immature and wanted his way. I can't imagine Jimmy Butler putting up with the tardiness of James Harden.
Well, and, you know, I do think James Harden, the Heat culture, could be an interesting fit. And you know, maybe he adapts. You know, James Harden, when he gets traded, I think there will be an understanding that his legacy is on the line. Jimmy Butler and James Harden do have a relationship, of course. So do James and Russ, a much longer relationship.
And Chris Paul.
It's funny, though. You know, yeah. It's funny, though. The Rockets thought they were getting Jimmy Butler, not this offseason, last offseason. Right. Had it lined up. They're ready to ship out Capella and Gordon to make the room. Harden and Butler had been talking. They were ready. And then Jimmy ghosted him and went and signed. Literally did not return texts and phone calls and went to Miami.
Ouch.
But look, those things, players get over those kind of things. But Miami, I would imagine, would the first thing they would say is, hell no, Bam is not on the table. Absolutely not. Don't even ask again. But Hero would absolutely intrigue the Rockets. Duncan Robinson would absolutely intrigue the Rockets. Heat have several vets on expiring contracts where you can make the money work. They're a little bit limited in picks, but there's absolutely ways for an offer that makes sense to be put together for Miami.
He's Tim McMahon. He covers the NBA for ESPN. How much better are the Lakers now than they were a couple of months ago?
Well, you know, obviously we've got to see how things fit. On paper, I think they're significantly better. Marc Gasol, to me, is a major upgrade over what they had at center. A much different player, but still, because of his physicality and intelligence, a great defense player. I think a little bit of a better fit offensively, just because he can space the floor and give AD some room to work. And then Schroeder and Harrell. Schroeder right now wants to start. We'll see. My guess is there's some kind of smooth transition to get him back coming off the bench. And that Schroeder Harrell pick and roll coming off the bench is a ton of firepower. And look, if LeBron is healthy and AD is healthy, the Lakers are the favorites, whether they upgraded the supporting cast or not, but they did.
The most interesting team people aren't talking about is who?
The most interesting team people aren't talking about. That is a good question. I'm trying to figure out who people aren't talking about. People are talking about Phoenix. People aren't talking. I don't know that the Nuggets, even though they went to the West Finals, I don't know if the Nuggets are a franchise that people talk about a whole lot. And obviously Jokic is a perennial All-NBA candidate. Jamal Murray at 23. If the bubble was a breaking out for him, was a springboard for him, they've got another star there. Michael Porter Jr. is one of the most fascinating talents in the league. You know, we'll see if he can put it together. If he does, you know, they potentially have a third star. The other thing is, if they wanted to be aggressive in the trade market, Michael Porter Jr. is absolutely the kind of, you know, he can be a centerpiece to go get a star. I mean, look, if the Nuggets call up the Rockets and they're talking Porter Jr. picks and, you know, like a Gary Harris Barton combo to make some salaries work, those conversations could heat up.
That's interesting. Did the Clippers improve?
I think Montrezl Harrell leaving probably needed to happen for the Clippers from a chemistry standpoint. I think Serge Ibaka comes in there and maybe fits a little bit better, you know, with the Kawhi-Paul George combo. There's not the, you know, old Clips versus, you know, the kind of the new regime there. Ibaka as a backup center or a starter, really, is a heck of a player. I need to see it from the Clippers. And honestly, my biggest concern about the Clippers is Paul George. And Paul George now, and definitely Paul George as that extension kicks in and he ages. Let's be honest, Paul George just kind of crumbled under the pressure of being a superstar on a team expected to contend. So to me, out of all the guys who are all NBA caliber players, he might have the most approved this season.
Your honest reaction when you saw that he got that super or that max extension?
Well,
does everybody have to get that, Tim? Like, couldn't they say, you know what, you're not worth the max, Paul? You're a B, maybe a B-plus player. Why does everybody have to get the max? I don't understand this.
Well, yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, why do superstars have to be able to determine the practice and travel schedules and flex their power with personnel moves? It's just, It is a player-run league. That's just the way it is. And with the Clippers, they went all in on Paul George when they pushed all those picks, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Gallinari, put that massive package together, really to get him and Kawhi. But they were all in on it then. So I guess they felt like, look, we're all in. There's no reason to mess around with this contract extension and and have a situation that was shaky last year in terms of happiness and comfort and all those kind of things. I guess they felt like they had to make him as comfortable as possible.
In fairness to James Harden, Luka Doncic didn't show up in shape either. Looked like he had a gut. So I, you know, when people say you pick on James Harden, it's a valid criticism that I did pick on him and I didn't pick on Luka Doncic. Luka Doncic.
Well, listen, those dudes are also naturally thick dudes. I mean, let's be honest. Neither one of them is ever going to pose shirtless in GQ. Harden's going to wear some fancy clothes and be on the cover. But, I mean, they're big, thick-body dudes. And I'm just telling you this. James Harden's weight ranks about 196th on the list of the Rockets' concerns right now.
Good stuff, Tim. And you're doing a great job. I enjoy reading your stuff, and we appreciate your time. Hope to have you on soon. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Dan.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. There are a lot of reasons to like Justin Tucker. He is going to go into the Hall of Fame. He's clutch and he's a winner. He's got great hair and he's also a Traeger guy. So there's a lot of things to love about Justin Tucker, the Ravens place kicker who joins us on the program. Good morning, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for that was quite the intro. Much appreciated, especially with the hair thing.
Yeah.
I actually spent some time on it this morning.
Do you do your hair before a game?
Before the COVID era, it was a consideration, but now I kind of just let the beard go, and I haven't got a haircut and quite a while now because I'm trying to avoid close contacts with as many people as possible. So about a year ago I was thinking, okay, well, I mean, if I'm standing next to Morgan and Sam and Randy during the national anthem, like those are sweet pictures that we want to have. So I've got to make sure the wig is tight. But this year, not really that as concerned.
Explain to me, if I've never kicked a field goal before and you wanted to teach me how to kick a field goal, where do we start?
I think you got to start with probably the most important principle in all sports that involve a ball. Keep your eye on the ball. It's a common theme in baseball, tennis, soccer, football. What I said the other night after the game, to just trying to keep it as simple as possible, in the moments where so many things can be going through your head, you just got to see the ball to kick the ball.
But you could kick blindfold.
It starts as simple as that.
You could kick blindfold, right?
I don't know if I could kick blindfolded with nearly as much, confidence or accuracy and power as if I'm not blindfolded, but I know it's possible. I've seen Pat McAfee hit like a 40 something yarder, set a Guinness World Record several years ago kicking blindfolded. So I'll leave the trick shots to the guys who are better at those.
Wait a minute, that's the Guinness record, the 40 yards?
It's 40 something, and I'm pretty sure Pat has the record. So shout out to Pat McAfee and, always doing it for the brand, but I'm pretty sure he has a Guinness World Record.
Well, why don't you go out this afternoon when this is over with and just blow him out of the books? I mean, come on.
It's a little snowy, out here in.
Wait, you don't have a practice, indoor practice facility?
Oh, well, that's no fun. It's not, if it's pouring down snow, you gotta, get out in it. So
I still like your chances even in the snow. explain to me how Deion Sanders became your, idol. Is that fair to say?
He was definitely one of my favorite players growing up as a as a little guy. So I grew up in Austin, Texas, and my family would always watch the Cowboys on Sunday afternoons. And I just love like the swag and like this, you know, the attitude that Prime brought to the game. I think everybody can appreciate that about Prime. So yeah, when I was in like first, second, third grade, we'd play football at recess, and I would always have like my Cowboys do-rag bandana tied up, and I would always play defense. So like I would try to pick off as many passes as I could, return as many punts as I could in that 30-minute recess break, and then hit the water fountain on the way in like it was nobody's business. But
what happens though? You get to the point where you're a kicker. Like, does it feel like it's a demotion that you know, defensive back, or maybe you want to play wide receiver, and then you're a kicker, and you know how the other players are going to label you, or at least see you're a kicker. How did you feel?
No, not at all. That was never a concern or a consideration of mine. I mean, maybe I'm wired a little different, but I was never really concerned about any of my teammates or coaches viewing me differently because of the position I play. Like that's one of the coolest things about the sport of football, is you have so many different types of athletes, probably the widest array of types of athletes on the field at any given time compared to any other sport. So, you know, in basketball, it's, you know, in all likelihood, it's taller athletes. And in
oh, he froze up. Something he never does on the field.
Or he's making us think about his comments.
Well, I know. He had me because I'm going, okay, all right.
His last comment was that if anyone else wants to be...
Wait, you froze up. You.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is. I'm in my basement right next to the modem. I should have pretty good Wi-Fi.
What's in the basement?
So this is kind of our catch-all room right now. A previous homeowner used this room as his office. But I don't really have much practical use for your traditional office, but right now we've got, you know, just like a sofa in here, and then let's see, I got my guitar's got an amp. Ooh. That's not my drum set. That's my 4-year-old son's drum set. Oh, we got a just like a TV on the ground, a trampoline.
What can you play?
I mean, I can carry a tune. I'm not really.
No, you can sing. I know that. Can you fire up the amp there?
I could. I mean, yeah. You really want me to?
Yep. Let's fire it up here. I know you can sing, but let's. I just froze the kicker. You're never supposed to freeze the kicker, and I just froze Justin Tucker, and he's going to come through here. Now, once again, a full reset, as we like to say in the business. The Ravens 8-5, and right now half game back, the wild card number 3 Dolphins in the tie-breaking department. Justin Tucker, who is a future Hall of Famer, joining us on the program from his basement with his guitar. All right, let me see.
That's all I got for you, Dan.
What's your go-to?
I'm more of like a rhythm, like kind of rhythm kind of guitarist, and then I try to rip some sweet vocals over that. But I mean, like I like 80s hair metal type of stuff, and then I like Third Eye Blind, like post, post grunge, like 90s era, like Nirvana type of stuff.
Okay. If you had a walk-up song when you went out to kick, what would you pick?
That's a tough one. Off the top of my head, maybe Hungry Like the Wolf, because we got the whole wolf pack out there, Morgan Cox, Sam Cooke, and myself. I mean, plus that song is just like
not many people pick class. Duran Duran as their walk-up song, but well done by you. Does Harbaugh ever say anything to you before you go out for a potential game-winning kick?
Typically, no one says anything to me, and I kind of prefer it that way. I mean, I'm kind of in my own little world for, you know, the 30 some odd seconds leading up to a, you know, especially an important kick, like at the end of a game. I kind of just am alone with my thoughts and kind of getting myself focused and in the zone, if you will. And then every once in a while, someone will come up to me and say something. And then I usually forget whatever it was that they said immediately. And then, you know, just go out there, try my best to make the kick. But now, if anybody is going to say something to me, it's usually Randy Brown, our kicking coach. It won't be like right before the kick, but it'll be, you know, first or second down. And it's usually just like nuts and bolts type of stuff. It's like, all right, we got a pretty significant right to left win. Just play that ball in the right third, right quarter, let it come back and just hit your ball, man. And it's, you know, really nothing too, you know, revolutionary by any means, but, you know, just hearing something as simple as that kind of reminds me not to overthink it, not to get too emotionally attached to whatever's happening or whatever will happen after my foot hits the ball. The only thing that really matters is the 1.3 seconds between when Morgan throws it back, when Sam spots it, and when I kick it. And it's just, you know, seeing the ball and hitting the ball.
You have 6 career tackles. What's the best one?
Because
McAfee used to try to blow people up. I would say none of them
because if I'm having to make a tackle, that's that's usually indicative of I didn't kick the ball well enough to ensure that the return the returner was stopped inside the 20 or 25. So no, you know what? Come to think of it, I had one that was kind of sweet. So in Pittsburgh on playing a nighttime prime game, primetime game a couple years back. I squibbed one down toward the open end of the stadium and the returner kind of muffed the ball down there at the goal line. And the timing of the return was all thrown off. And our coverage team was like, had surrounded him inside the 5-yard line. And somehow he squeezed out of there, bounced it. And I tackled a guy at the 9-yard line. So typically when your kicker's making tackles, it's at like the 30, 35-yard line and it's after or he's not making a tackle and the guy's, you know, running past him like Forrest Gump, like all the way through the end zone and through the tunnel at the other end of the stadium, which is not good. But, you know, every once in a while, like I happen to have a tackle inside the 10-yard line, so I feel like that one's probably pretty good.
What's the worst beating you got after kicking a game-winning field goal? Because, like, you know, sometimes we look at those kickers and everybody wants to say congratulations. Did you have one where you go, guys, stop, it hurts?
I mean, yeah, I'm not built like most of my teammates. You know, I'm probably pound for pound like the smallest guy on the team, even though in like regular normal society, if you want to call it that, I'm like a, you know, I'm 6'1", 183. So I'm not like a super little guy by any means, but in the football world, yeah, I am. Let's see, at Texas, when we played Texas A&M on Thanksgiving night, my senior year, kicked the game winner and kind of started running towards our sideline like this. And then I see like our sideline is just emptying. The entire team is running out toward midfield where we're all at. And Kenny Vaccaro, outstanding professional safety now, an outstanding safety then, he is running full speed with a look in his eye like, I'm taking this guy down. And he horse collar tackles me. I'm at the bottom of a dog pile. And thankfully, I didn't shred both of my knees or anything else for that matter. But I remember like being at the bottom of the pile, just in pain, and also very happy that we had just made the game-winning kit. But I remember coming up from the pile, just like gasping for air. I had like blood coming out of my nose, and I mean, hey, it's all in a kind of crazy way, you know, like that stuff, those experiences are why you play the game. You know, celebrating with your teammates with absolute reckless abandon is one of the greatest things about playing, you know, playing a team sport and winning in big moments.
It's great to talk to you, and congrats on the success so far, and hopefully you get into the postseason to make some more of those game-winning kicks. But thanks for joining us, Justin, and thanks for playing along, literally playing along with us.
Of course. Yeah, and thanks for having me, Dan.
That's Justin Tucker. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app as we make the awkward segue into the number one team in the country. And Nick Saban set to joining us on the program. I'll talk about that in a moment, Coach. We were just talking about, you know, when's the last time you went Christmas shopping?
I usually, once a year, I have a lady that I'll meet at the store, and I might give her a $100 bill and a list of things to get for Miss Terry. And she brings it back to me all wrapped up, and we're ready to roll.
I don't know if it's $100. It feels like it might be a little more than that, Coach. Right?
But I need assistance to shop, I guess, is the key to the drill.
Now, is it required that the assistant coaches get you a gift?
They usually do, and we usually get them a gift as well as their wives. I think sometimes wives get overlooked in coaching because they have to be so supportive. And in college, you know, they're involved in recruiting and relationship building. So sometimes they get overlooked. So I got to make sure that at Christmas they know that we appreciate what they do.
How do you know you've had a good recruiting year?
When the puppy dogs grow up to become, you know, real dogs, then you really kind of know. You think by evaluation, which recruiting is probably a bit of an inexact science. I think evaluation of players is an inexact science because you can probably measure some of the physical characteristics, but you really never know for sure, you know, what the psychological disposition is to develop and compete relative to what you're capable of. I think that's probably true in anything, not just sports, but it makes it a bit of an inexact science, so you really don't know how the players that you got were developed. You know, where they are right now, they look like they're pretty good, relatively speaking. But how are they going to develop over the next year or two or three? And what's their maturity level going to be able to compete? And I think one of the most important things in development is, you know, how do you accept the critical eye? You know, people who have goals and aspirations and really want to accomplish something, they're always looking for people to, you know, tell me what I need to do to get better. But then we have, you know, quite a few folks that they've had a lot of success. So they look at it more when they get corrected, like it's personally insulting. So it makes it harder for them to grow and develop. So all these factors sort of, you know, come together to determine how someone develops and how early they're ready to contribute and how quickly they actually develop the skill level to be the kind of player they're capable of being.
And I find that really interesting. You're talking about, and I have kids who are in their early 20s, and you're right, how you can say something and then how they accept it. And I was curious how recruiting has changed for you over the years. What's the biggest difference that you've seen?
I think that expectation that the player has now is a lot greater than it used to be, which I think is a little bit of an obstacle to overcome, because I think when people have expectations, like I want to start as a freshman or I want to catch 50 passes or whatever as a freshman, and then those things don't happen readily because they are focused on outcome-oriented type things and not what they really need to do to get the outcome, they get frustrated. And when they get frustrated, they don't perform as well, they don't develop as well, they don't improve because, you know, they're in a negative attitude about things. So,
well, social media has been, I mean, that's a big opponent that you have to fight as well, of what people say to these kids, and they are kids, and then how they react to it.
Well, and I think you're 100% right. It's the expectation that gets created by social media. And, you know, look, 20 years ago, we didn't have all these recruiting ratings and 5-star, 4-star, but all these things create an expectation. And it's not the player, it's not the young man's fault that these expectations are created externally, but they do have an impact and affect some guys. And they think they're failing if they don't meet these sort of, I'm going to call them almost false expectations, because they're not realistic in a lot of ways. So it takes away from this whole process of thinking about what I have to do to develop and get results, and become very outcome-oriented and disappointed if I don't get the outcome that people expect.
He's Nick Saban. Alabama will play Florida, SEC title game coming up Saturday night. Who's the recruit you missed that you still think about, you missed out on?
There's more than one.
Well, I asked Tom Izzo at Michigan State, and he said he missed out on Chris Weber, and he said he thinks about it more than he should. But I didn't know if there's one that you either see this guy or you think about it and you go, how did I miss out on that guy?
You know, no one comes to mind readily, but if I thought about it, I'm sure I'd come up with somebody. But, you know, I think one of the hardest things in recruiting is you really develop relationships with certain players as you recruit them. And it's very, very disappointing when you have a really close relationship with a guy and then the guy goes someplace else. And not only do you have that relationship, but now you got to play against them, especially SEC. And so I think that's, you know, one of the harder things. You know, Leonard Fournette comes to mind. You know, I had a really good relationship with him. You know, his mom made crawfish etouffee when I went in the house, and it was the best ever and all that. And then, you know, you think you got a chance to get the guy, and then you don't. It's kind of, I don't know, it's a little disappointing because of the relationships, not only you develop with players, but also with their family.
Yeah, and you have to ask for seconds, too, with the etouffee, right? Don't want to offend mom.
That's one thing about Louisiana. You don't go on home visits without eating, and if you have two in one night, you got to eat twice.
Who does Kyle Trask remind you of?
Oh, nobody in particular. He's really a pretty heady, heads-up, very accurate, smart, executes their offense well, reads things. He's got good players, good system that they play in, and he gets the ball to the right guys in the right place in the right circumstances. And it's very, very efficient, very effective, and they've got a lot of mismatch players, which make it really difficult to match up, and they do a really good job of putting them in, you know, tough spots to get the right people on them.
We had your quarterback on a couple of weeks ago, and he's got a sneaky sense of humor there, Coach. We really liked him.
Oh, Mac, yeah. He's good. Yeah. Mac is very bright guy, and I think he's used his knowledge and experience to develop to become the kind of player that he is.
He said that wide open receivers are the toughest to hit.
You know, I played quarterback back in high school in my first year of college, and I tend to agree with him on that, because you know, it just runs through your mind right before you throw it. I can't mess this up.
And that's why you only played 1 year in college.
Probably.
Hey, it's great to talk to you. Good luck on Saturday night. When do you decide your first play? Do you know what your first play is going to be?
We usually decide that today. I mean, we always have a script on offense. And, you know, the coordinators have, you know, the biggest input in that. But on defense, you know, you it's a little different because you don't know whether what personnel they're going to be in and whether you're going to be playing regular nickel. You know, so you got to kind of have your call for whatever they do.
Well, it's great to talk to you. Happy holidays. Good luck against Florida and whatever happens after that, Coach. Always appreciate the time.
All right, Dan. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you, buddy. Have a good holiday. Thanks. Bye-bye.
That's Nick Saban. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.